Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode contains scenes which are not suitable for children and which some listeners may find distressing. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I just accepted that. I was probably just going to die there. I didn't want to kill me. I didn't have any plans to run. I didn't think because I was too afraid. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was normal. I'd given up mentally and physically and emotionally. I'd had enough. I was broken. They'd taken everything from me. He had it all. He's had everything from me. There's nothing Brian Kenny hasn't taken from me. He's had it all. So I'd just given up. I just accepted the fact that I wasn't in control. And my family, like Jonathan O'Reilly's family, next week probably. Because I knew deep down I'd never be allowed to keep going on with that secret. I knew that was too much. So I just thought I was going to die and end up in the field. That's what he said he's going to put me. And he brought me to the field the day after. I'm standing in the middle of the field and he's shooting over my head and he's shooting to the left of me, he's shooting to the right of me, and I'm standing there literally with my arms by my sides, and he's telling me, see how easy it is, and he doesn't give a fuck, he's just reloading the gun constantly. And he's pointing it at my face, then going up like that, banging in the air. And then putting the gun in my mouth, I could feel it at the back of my throat, like single barrel shotgun, put a handgun in my mouth in the shed. Do you know what it's like? It's fucking horrible. Cut the top of your mouth off and it shoves it in your mouth. You can taste it, it's the metal, the steel. You have to smell it. And after them sticking the gun in your mouth, after being shot, you can taste the gunpowder and all in the back of your throat. It's disgusting, And he didn't give a fuck, he was just an animal. Everything got really crazy, He was checking the work phone all the time, making sure I wasn't ringing anybody, checking the messages. He was ringing the junkies up, making sure that I was actually just going to meet them and coming back. That's when the timing started, really got bad. He would go in the car and then he'd come back and say, look, how I done it. I done it in 4 minutes and 15 seconds or whatever, or 4 minutes and 17 seconds. This should only take you that amount of time to get there and back. All you're doing is pulling up in the car, handing it over, taking the money straight back. I think I went one day and got petrol because there's no petrol in the car, and he killed me when I came back. Everything just got timing, and the control was just unreal. I had to ask, could I go to the toilet? I had to ask, could I use the bath? I had to ask, could I have something to eat? Where stuff just got real extreme. It was like that before, but it just got, the control just got worse. It was a lot more threat with the family, and it was a lot more, where he would say that before, but it wasn't as bad. It was just more, he had me before. And once more, that's when it was tormenting. It was constantly tormenting me with my family and threatening me and beating me and haunting me. And he was making sure that he kept my mouth shut.
This is The Witness. In his own words. Episode 7. The Lips.
He didn't want me talking to anybody. It was kind of like he wanted me running the business, but then he didn't want me running the business because he was afraid I was going to speak to somebody. Does that make sense? Yeah. So on one hand, he's like saying, I can't let him out of the house because he's going to tell somebody. But the other hand, he's saying, I need him to run the business because I can't run it. Just to understand, so on one hand, he needed me in the house because he could control it, what I was doing. But on the other hand, he needed money coming. He needed the business to be still going. And he couldn't do it because he was strung out. So he needed me to do what he couldn't do. But he couldn't have both. And that's what he was trying to juggle. He was trying to control every aspect of my life.
He's obviously worried that you're going to crack.
Yeah. For a while, I just accepted it. I just thought, there's nothing I can do. I can't help him now. He was dead. And so I just thought about his family, thought about my own. Yeah, I just accepted what was happening. Yeah, I just thought there's no way.
And can you remember a point which you started to feel that you could, that you could have the strength to make a move and get out of there?
Tell you what, we're going to kill somebody else. It was just something that I couldn't. I didn't sign up for any of it, but I definitely didn't sign up for that. I already hid the gun to the murder of Jonathan, and I couldn't live without my conscience. That was killing me. I already felt like I was involved by doing that. Like, I was in the ditch. They were around the other side in the car, and they had petrol in a bottle, and a milk bottle, an old milk bottle that had been in the shed for years. And they wanted me to blow the car up when he came out of the house. They were going to run up and plug on there. And I was in the ditch and I was like, no, I'm after seeing two Garda cars. I rang them saying two Garda cars were after going up and down there twice. And they were like, I said, yeah, they're driving up and down this road. There was no Garda cars. But I was just thinking of any reason just to say, just... I didn't think they were going to stop. I thought they were usually what Brian would do. He wouldn't give in if we were doing something. If we were doing a robbery and a security man turned up, he would just fuck off for a few hours and we'd go back and get it again. It could kill him if we didn't get. If we went there on a robbery and he didn't get what he wanted, it'd be the worst night ever. The whole family's getting broken up. The whole house is getting killed. Everyone's going to suffer if he didn't get what he wanted. And then they said, we'll leave it for tonight and we'll come back. That was it then. That's when I thought I needed to get out of here. Just couldn't get it out of my head that they killed him. I couldn't get it out of my head. People keep saying, well, you didn't know him. It's not the point whether I knew him or not. Why should that matter? You're taking a human's life. They killed somebody, someone's son, someone's father, someone's brother, someone's friend, I just couldn't live with what they'd done to Jonathan, and then I couldn't live with the thought of me being involved in killing somebody else. Just wasn't willing to do it. So I thought, and I'll either get caught and get killed. At least I'll try. At least in my head, at least I thought, at least I'm going to try and get out here. At least I'm going to try and do the right thing. Whether I do it or not, I didn't know whether I was going to be able to get out. And that's when I made the plan. And everywhere was locked, and there was the walls and electric fences, and everything was just locked and locked. And he barricaded my car in and took the keys of the bikes. And the only thing I could think of was I always had the smack phone with me and the coke phone, so I always had a phone. Well, I couldn't ring the guards. I couldn't go to the guards because he always said he had friends in the guards. That's what he'd say. I needed to get out of the house, but I just didn't know how I was going to get out of it. I knew I was going to get electrocuted getting over that gate, but I didn't give a fuck about getting electrocuted. I'd been through worse. I didn't care about that. And I knew once I got outside, all the lights were going to come on. All the spotlights. So Mondo's room was at the front, so that was my excuse to be at the front of the house. So I was allowed to go to the front of the house because I'd have to go and get him for school. I'd have to do certain things or get him ready or whatever. So I go and say, get Mondo and say, come on, I'll do your homework with you and bring him back to the kitchen. Come on, have your dinner, bring him back to the kitchen. So I always had an excuse to go back and forward to the front of the house. I left the inside door on the latch and I went to the front door and it was locked with a key and I couldn't find the key. So what I was doing while Mondo was having his dinner or doing the homework, I closed the door, I was going through the drawers and looking, and I found the key. The key to the main door. I went to the main door and I had kind of the lock up here and I turned the lock. Both doors I left closed, but just with the latch off them. So they looked like they were locked, but they weren't locked. And then for about 2 days then, it was like a test run. Every time I came down the twisty stairs in my bedroom, they creaked. So what I was doing was I was holding onto the side of the walls and sliding down them. Because if you hear the creaky jumping up out of bed, and you have to remember he's walking around the house every day with a pump action shotgun full of bullets. This is what I was living with, like. He'd blow your head off, like. So I kind of done a test run for like a day or two. Seeing could I get to the front door, seeing could I open them. That was grand. For the 2 days, 3 days, I can't remember exactly how many days I walked. So I knew he hadn't realised the door had been unlocked. I knew there was only one person that could do it, that would have the bottle. Unfortunately, that was my sister. But, I knew if anyone had the balls to do it, it would be her to come and get me.
And she didn't let you down?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And I don't know. She was always, Louise always kind of, all her life she fought for me. I remember at her confirmation, she had a black eye. Some fella in Ballymun had hit me with a gat. And she went down to fight him. And she had a black eye in her confirmation. My ma had to put all the makeup on her face. Literally had a big shine as she had the day before her confirmation. She was fighting for me all her life, still is to this day. Flying up in the bedroom, I rang my sister. I said, you need to come get me. I said, I need you to reverse to the drive. Turn your lights off and ring and hang up once. Felt like forever. And she rang and hung up. And that was it. The stairs were spiral stairwells and they were wood. Made out of wood and they were red and they creaked so much. Every time I stepped on the stairs, he'd open the door. Every time. And I literally didn't even walk down the stairs. I kind of held onto the wall, onto the railings, and I kind of floated down the stairs. I was trying not to let my feet touch. I was kind of touching the sides of the wall because that's how he used to always wake up. He'd know I was coming down the stairs, but he'd hear the cracks. And then I got past the bedroom door. All I could see was him lying there. She was on the far side. Never forget it. She was turned over. And then he was there. He was lying and the needle was hanging out of his arm. And the belt was around it. And then the shotgun was just lying on the floor. And I remember someone asking me once, would you not have picked up and shot him? And killed him. When he was asleep. I'd be lying if I think if I said the thought didn't go through my head. But then I'm just not that type of person. I'm just not built like that. I kind of thought I'm not going to get out of here. I did kind of look at him and think, look, what can he do now? When I seen the gun on the floor. Then I thought, that's just not, then I just, it was just like a thing, it did go through my head. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. When I walked past and I seen it, I kind of just looked at it, and then I looked down on the floor, and then I was like, no, I'm just, I did think of killing him, like. And then I got to the door. I'll never forget it, I opened it, pulled the first door, there's two doors I had to get through, and all I hear is Joey. Where you going? And my heart sank. I thought it was him. And I looked around and it was Mondo standing behind me in his pajamas. I was like, where are you going? I was like, no, I'm just going out. Everything's going to be all right. I'll be back in a few minutes. Picked him up. And I brought him into his bedroom. Put him in the bed. Shoot a blank on. Just told him to shush, told him to stay there. And I got out the front door. Obviously, Louise had rang. She was outside waiting. So this place was like a fucking prison. Like, there was dogs on chains. So if a car pulled up, the dogs would bark. All the lights come on. The cameras are there. Like, so as soon as I went out, I had to run, get over them gates, get over the electric fence, and plus the fucking dogs, I was terrified from them. Even though they were our own dogs, I was afraid of them. I don't know how many times they tried to bite me. And I just jumped over the fence, got into the car. I just said drive, and she just put the foot down. And we didn't even know where we were going, to be honest with you. We hadn't got clear what I was doing. And I just thought, I remember her face. I just said they're after killing someone, they're after killing him. She was just like, what do you mean? And I was like, no, they killed him, the fella outside the prison. And she was like, what? I said, they're going to kill me. And she was like, no, we'll get to Ma, I'll sort it, Ma will help us. Yeah, we rang me Ma, and she was in the Royal Oak in Finglas Village. I just said they killed him. She just couldn't believe it. But she was just adamant from the get-go. She just, from the first minute I told her, she was adamant he wasn't going to kill me, but she was adamant I was going to do the right thing. And straight away she said it to me. She said, I promise you I'll stand by you. You're going to do the right thing. He's not going to kill you, and he's not going to kill anybody else again. And you're going to make sure he doesn't. I remember her just telling me. And then we were just driving around for ages because we didn't know what to do. She told me this, but she was telling me this on one hand, and then the other hand, she was kind of thinking, what the fuck, where the fuck do we go? And then we're getting a phone call saying he's at Ballymun. Someone rang to say he was at Ballymun, he had a petrol can in his hand or something. Whatever happened, he was ran away from the garden. He didn't get to the house. Ma just out of nowhere says, I know this guard from Ballymun that used to come and see us when you were kids, and when Dad used to hit her. And Ma said he was always good to her. He was the man that got barren orders against me Dad, and he would arrest me Dad and take me Dad away for hitting her. And Ma said he was always kind, like, and if he was there, we're going to be all right. And she rang, and I don't know whether he was on or he was just finished or whatever, and she'd rang and left a message for him to ring her back. She said it was Mary O'Callaghan, and it was really important. I think she did say to get him to... She said it was about a murder, so he would contact. Then we just waited, and then my phone rang, and it was Stephen Daly, the guard from Ballymun. He rang me Ma to say to bring me to the police station. My Ma told him over the phone, and she said she'd bring me once he promised that they didn't take us away from each other. And he promised that they'd let me Ma stay. He knew me straight away when we went in, Stephen Daly. He says, you still look like the little guy when I used to go to the flat and see you. And he said he knew what to do, and he knew the right person in the ring that I was looking after. And the guy that I was looking after was obviously the guy that had looked after the Veronica Guerin murder, to with John Gilligan, and that he was meant to be a good guy, like a decent girl, a decent copper. And he rang him. He said he was coming. And then Stephen said, because the place was getting people, the place was getting full, everyone with guards, and everyone could see there was something going on, and obviously word was getting around the police station, and people were kind of coming to look, like different guards and people, detectives, and not, it was like everyone was coming to look at you, like stare, like, oh, what's going on? So he said, I'm going to put you in the cell over here, but I'm going to leave the door open, and your Ma's going to go with you. So, like, we're not locking you up, we're not. Nobody can look and see it. So he put me and Ma in the cell. I think a guard kind of stood at the door just to make sure no one opened the door or whatever. But it was a bit strange being in a cell with my Ma, and I was terrified, and I'm sitting in a cell. And the door was closed, but we weren't locked in. But it was a bit of a weird situation. I'm sitting there shaking, like sweating, broken, battered, bruised, and with my Ma wrapped around me on a bleeding stone thing in the cell, like fucking, you can see the water dripping. And we're just sitting there in the cell shaking, like just me and my Ma. And I just remember my Ma holding me, hugging me. She was crying. And we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know what was going to do. We just knew nothing was ever going to be the same again. And then this man walked in called Toddy O'Loughlin. He just walked in and he kind of looked around and he said to, "Why are they in the cell?" Real, from the beginning, he was very for me. He was just very kind to me and my ma. But straight away, he was kind of like, get them out of there. They shouldn't be in there. And then your ma was like, no, it's just because everyone was looking. We just wanted to get them out of the way. But you could hear him kind of giving them a bollocking, like they should have put them in a room or something, do you know what I mean? Like, give a cup of tea or something, I don't know. But he wasn't impressed, like. Toddy was the one that went and got John Gilligan for Veronica Guerin. He's the one that went to England and took him back on the plane and got him convicted. I told him, I said, they killed Jonathan O'Reilly outside the prison. He says, who did? I said, Brian Kenny and Thomas Hensher. And he says, I know them. He said, but why is Kenny involved? He couldn't fathom because the connection, he could understand Henshin because he knew Henshin, he knew Richie McCormick, he knew Robbie O'Hanlon, but they knew Kenny from Fingless, not from, I said, no, he's buying the heroin from him. Brian's the one that shot him. And he said to me, none of them will get to you, and I promise you that. And then they just said, you need to tell me everything. And he said, you need to make a statement. Because I can't get a warrant without a statement. And I need to ring a judge. They had to go ring a judge so I can judge up out of sleep. And they need to tell a judge to have a statement so he could give a warrant. This was like, at this stage, it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. And, that's when what did they say? That's when I earned my nickname, Joey the Lips. That's when I became a rap, as they said. And I broke the code or the rules. That's what they say. I call it doing the right thing. And that's when I done the right thing, yeah. I remember trying to rush it because I was afraid he was coming for my family. And I knew he didn't know where the gun was, but I knew he'd be looking for it. And that's what I kept thinking. He's gone. Because he was texting as we were doing the statement. He thought he was reading the messages. He was saying in the messages, I want me gun. I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to kill you. He was saying all this. So the phone kept bleeping and bleeping and bleeping. And Toddy just kept looking at the messages and kept saying, don't let him keep writing them. And he kept ringing. Like, I think there was over 100 missed calls. They needed me to make the statement and they needed me to give them the gun. I knew once I signed it, once they said you need to sign it, and I think I had to sign it a few times. They said I got X's and there was one or two papers I had to sign it, and then there was a mistake I had to initial it. But I just remember once I was with Joseph O'Callaghan, I knew that was it. I knew, yeah, that was it. I knew I was a dead man walking there. I kind of thought then, once I signed it, I kind of thought, fuck it. It's too late now. I wanted to get him. I don't know whether it was anger or more. I was kind of like, just get them now. And I'll just deal with whatever I have to deal with after that.
How long is it then until they get the warrant and you go?
About 3 hours. I couldn't understand why they were so slow. I'll never forget that. I was so impatient because I understood how Kenny walked. At first, I don't know whether they believed me. A lot of people were doubting me, I think, and I couldn't understand why they weren't acting quick enough. I was saying, like, he's in the house, he has the gun in the house. I have the gun for the motor. I know where the bike is. I know where the letters are. I know where the cars are. I know where everything is. So why can't you go and arrest him? And they had to do a bike. Everything had to be done by the book. So it's not like you see in the movies. It's not like you see, I don't know, on Kenny's favourite programme, The Sopranos, and the police just turn up and grab you. Everything was just very slow. Because I think they just had to follow protocol. I couldn't understand because I knew I had everything. So to me, I was just like, just come on, let's get in the car. Like, I can, we can, this will be. And I knew Kenny, and I knew the way he taught, and I thought, oh, he's up at that field, he's going to tear, he's going to be digging the field up, he's going to find the gun, it's going to be too late. If he'd have found that gun, I was fucked. If he'd have got to the gun before me, like if Kenny had found the murder weapon before me, I was dead. But what would the guards had? Nothing. I could have brought them up to the field, the gun was gone, they would have let me go, and I was a dead man walking. Dead man. Like, he would have killed me. And that's what I was worried about, and I was trying to say that to them. I was saying, we need to get to the gun before he gets to the gun. They were like, well, he doesn't know where it is. I said, yeah, but there's only three fields. And he knows the fields like I know the fields.
But he wasn't thinking that logically about go get the gun.
No, and I just think he thought he was that cocky and confident. And he was that convinced that I was... He had me under control. He was really convinced that I was going to come back. There's no way on earth he thought I was in the police station. Toddy's on the phone and he's ringing people, getting people out of bed, and he's, I could actually hear him saying hello. People like, hey, wake up, out of bed, Ballymun now. And just kept on the phones, and they were asking me about the house. So I said, well, you need to get, first of all, you need to go over the gate. Then you need to get past the dogs, past the fence, past the gate, past the dogs. I said, the lights are going to come on and the cameras are there. So he's going to see any of the pump action shotgun. And they were looking at me like I was crazy. I was like, I'm telling you, when you get over that gate, he's going to come out with a pump action shotgun. And we walked out the back, and there were must have been about like 40 men. There were vans, there was cars, there was all sorts of army, like armed stuff and guns. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, and they put me and my man to the back of Toddy's car. And then it was like a convoy. Everyone went to Mitchell Sound College. We all left Ballymun. And they were all on walkie-talkies, talked to each other in the cars. We went up. Then we parked up the road on the left. And the guards all jumped over the gates. They had their guns out and their guard vests on. And you can just hear them all screaming, guardy, guardy, drop the gun, drop the gun. And you can even see Toddy's face. I told you he had a gun. And they got him. They eventually dropped the weapon and he opened the back door. They got him on the ground and handcuffed him. Brought him out. And then they brought her out. She was like a fucking banshee. She was pregnant, screaming like a bleeding lunatic, roaring up and down the street and all. And they arrested her. And then it was mad. Within 5 minutes, Brian's dad pulled up in the car. They got the young fella. They gave the young fella to Brian's dad. Then the next minute the cars were coming past and they told me and my mum to put her head down, and you could see Brian going in the first car, and then she was gone in the second car behind them, and I didn't know where they were going then. And I think they let my mum go then. They said one of them took my mum back to Ballymun and I would have to bring them around the fields. Went in the back side, went in to the kitchen where Kenny was. Gun was on the floor. They told me to stand against the press and start taking pictures. Yeah, just start taking pictures of me. So they told me to stand beside the gun and took pictures. There was ammunition or something, I don't know what else was on the counter, to take pictures. Brought me into the house, into the hall, up to my bedroom. And we went up to the room, and there was my bed, there was the table, the scales, the chairs. And there was no drugs around there. There was just the scales, the bags, and whatever. He'd, don't know where he'd put whatever was there, he'd put away. That's when the guard said, where's your stuff? I said, this is my stuff. He was like, no, like, where's your things? Like, where's your clothes and stuff? I said, yeah, whatever I have is here. Like, I never thought of it. I never really thought of it as much of a big thing. Until later on in life, until someone said it to me afterwards. And one of the psychologists said to me, do you not think that was a sad moment? And to me, I was just used to it. That's what I had. Came back down the stairs, showed him the spare room where Thomas would stay. That was just nothing in that room, it was just literally a room, just a small room. I think there was a little wardrobe in a chest of drawers. Went into their room and Kenny's room, and There was just needles, heroin, money, phones, tinfoil, blood, ropes, belts, jewellery, cocaine on tray, like on CD covers, tinfoil with heroin on it, bundles of cash. It was like, do you ever see Whitney Houston at home, Bobby Brown were in the room smoking the crack? Google that picture, that's what it was like. That's literally what it was like. Go back through the house then and we went into the shed. There was just cars, tools, bikes. There was three or four cars in it, like. There was bikes, there was tools, there was boning gear that we'd use for when they're doing the robberies. There was just anything you think, I ain't got to do with crime, like robbing. There was just there, crowbars, cutters. Then there was the man cave down the back. With all locks and doors and chains and all, it's just not something that nice. It's not something that I like to remember. Spent enough time in it, so.
You're showing the guards all of this.
Yeah.
And what are they saying about that?
They just, I don't think they understood how big of an operation it was. You could see there was more of a bigger catch than they thought they were getting. This was before we even got to the gun, like. This was before I'd even handed them the mortar weapon. They were just taking the back of the hall. It was just a mad. They couldn't understand why I lived there, how I lived there, and then they couldn't understand. It was just they were trying to get a grasp of the whole operation, what was going on here, like, so they could see straight away the operation was a lot more bigger, and they. It wasn't like we were just selling it to 5 or 6 people, like, we were selling it to anyone and everyone that wanted it was getting it. And yeah, they were just taking it all in. I think they were just more in shock than that. Obviously, the gun was the main thing. Everyone wanted the gun. More guards had come from Fingless and they had, like, these, like, shovels and all stuff to hit the trees with and all. They looked to search. And I was like, you don't need any of that stuff because I know where everything is, like. So on the way up to the field, they were like, ah, he's full of shit, like, there's no gun up here. Like, he has us running around like fucking idiots, like, making me out to be a lawyer, like. And I was kind of looking at them as if thinking, again, we've got to see what you're talking about, man. I know it's here because I put it here. We went into the field, turned right. Picture now, walked up for 20 or 30 steps. And I just said, there it is, there. And they couldn't see it, nobody could see it. Only me, I says, yeah, there it is. And then they were like, we can't see it, show us. And then we walked up. And I remember putting my hand in to grab the gun. And they everyone started shouting. Everyone was like, don't touch it, don't touch it, don't touch it. I was like, that's it. And they were like, no, just leave it there. And then they surrounded it, put all the tape and all, and the fella came and they pulled it out and they took the pictures, and then you could see all their faces change, and then they were all like, oh my God, we have to go on, and everyone's ringing everybody, and they're all ringing the police stations and ringing, I don't know who they're ringing. And they're like, we have it, we have to go on.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.